The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 11th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, Where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, See how he loved him. But some of them said, Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, Take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him, and let him go. This is the gospel of the Lord. Please remain standing for one moment, if you would, as I begin our proclamation today. Yit Gadal v'Yit Kadash Shnei Rabbah. Please be seated. These words begin the Kaddish, the Jewish prayer for the dead. The prayer is one of the most essential elements of communal mourning across the various streams of Judaism. And these beginning words, printed on the front page of the Post-Gazette on Friday, translate to magnified and sanctified be your name. In the face of all the pain, anger, sadness, and emptiness that accompanies death, the Jewish people begin their mourning not in the depth of these emotions, but with a bold proclamation of faith in the goodness and the holiness of God. It's been hard to wrap our minds and especially our words around what we have all felt this past week as Pittsburgh and especially our Jewish community has begun to process and grieve the death of 11 of God's faithful people at the Tree of Life Synagogue. In recognition of this, David Shribman, the executive editor of the Post-Gazette, began a statement on the headline by saying, When you conclude that there are no words to express a community's feelings, then maybe you are thinking in the wrong language. He continues, In many synagogues, the tradition is for those who mourn to stand during the recitation of this prayer. In others, it is the entire congregation that stands, reflecting the notion that no person stands alone in grief, that the grieving are surrounded by others who are sharing their sadness and loss. It is here that Jesus finds Mary and Martha and their community following the death of their brother Lazarus in John's Gospel. John tells us many had come to them to console them about their brother, and by the time today's reading starts, the crowd is following Mary and Martha to join them in mourning, leaving them to be heading to the tomb. While the community stands with them in mourning, though, we see that death has brought Mary and Martha to their knees. Martha has already fallen on her knees and pled with Jesus following his arrival, and now we find Mary also kneeling at Jesus' feet as she says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Her desperate words echo our thoughts in response to death, especially one as tragic and senseless as those this past week. God, where were you? God, where are you in all this? How could you let this happen? When Jesus sees Mary crying and also those who came with her weeping, we hear that he is greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. Most scholars agree that there doesn't seem to be a translation that accurately captures the depth and complexity of Jesus' emotions here. Yes, he is, on some level, greatly disturbed and deeply moved, but his response has additional connotations. Anger, rejection of the entire situation, and so he lets out a guttural noise of some sort, is what the word in the Greek indicates. This moves what we hear beyond just these basic emotions to indicate how fully and how deeply Jesus is sickened by the gravity of this situation. This is the pit in the stomach emptiness, the punch in the gut pain and deflation that we feel with emotion that cannot be described. John wants us to recognize and even to feel how deeply Jesus' response goes. It's one thing to say we are greatly disturbed by death and deeply moved when someone we love has died. But it is another to try to describe everything we feel in that grief. The indescribable, visceral, physical feeling that takes us over. The feeling that strikes even more deeply when we're among a community that is grieving a loss, not of one, but of 11 of its beloved people, attacked in their house of worship, their place of sanctuary, their lives taken so suddenly and so violently, as we are all racked by the painful emptiness of just how terrible and senseless it all is, how powerless we feel in its wake. Jesus himself then weeps. He joins Mary and Martha and their community in their mourning. He stands with them in their pain. When Jesus comes to the tomb, he again is greatly disturbed, we hear, but he frames what is to come as an opportunity to witness the glory of God. And as we see with the Kaddish, Jesus begins his prayer. He begins first with prayer, honoring God and giving thanks to God, that God will indeed hear his prayer. And so when Jesus calls Lazarus, come out, we hear that the formerly dead man, the beloved brother of Mary and Martha, the friend of the whole community, exits the tomb, still wrapped and bound in the cloth of the grave clothes. Jesus concludes by saying, "Unbind him and let him go." It is all too painfully clear to us as we look at our lives and the world around us that it is far more than the deceased who are bound by death. And it seems it is primarily the fear surrounding the threat of death that is particularly debilitating and devastating for our world today. For it is fear for safety and security that leads people to fear others. And right now we see that that fear is insidious and pervasive. A quick look at the comments section of any article or Facebook post or tweet readily reveals how many people are living in ongoing fear of and hostility toward anyone who thinks or speaks or votes or believes or interprets Scripture differently than they do. And unfortunately, as much as we try to resist, when we feel threatened, when our vision of the world as we hope it to be is compromised, we too can at times participate in fueling the division and hostility. But it is a choice to live in suspicion and fear. And to make that choice is to allow the reign of death to have dominion over us. In so many ways, we in this world have chosen to be bound by death and been willing to wrap ourselves and our world in our own grave clothes instead of trusting in the promise of resurrection life that God extends. Dorothy Sully writes, "Death is what takes place within us when we look upon others not as a gift, blessing, or stimulus, but as a threat, danger, or competition. It is the death that comes to all who try to live by bread alone. This is the death that the Bible fears and gives us good reason to fear. It is not the final departure we think of when we speak of death. It is that purposeless, empty existence devoid of genuine human relationships, and filled with anxiety, silence, and loneliness." Lutheran pastor and professor Caroline Lewis similarly reflects on the way in which our extreme fear of death causes us to allow it and give it immense power over us and our lives. She writes, "Today, in a world that witnesses the massacre at the Tree of Life Synagogue, the caravan of migrants, quote-unquote, traveling north seeking asylum, the ashes of Matthew Shepard interred at the National Cathedral. Loving the neighbor as yourself is the means by which we can fight off death every day, the means by which we will be able to see the gift of the saint in all. Without this mandate, without this principle, we allow death to infringe on our lives prematurely and give it more power over us than it should have. We allow death to have its way before it should. We allow death to determine our way of being in the world that has acquiesced to a matter of factness, the inevitability of it that truncates the power of the kingdom of God and the presence of God in our midst. And finally, we allow death to have more power than resurrection. Sully, Caroline Lewis, and Jesus reveal to us that it does not have to be this way. Through Jesus Christ, God offers Lazarus and thus Mary and Martha and their community. God offers us, God offers the world, the way of resurrection and life. This isn't to say that the temporal power of death is eliminated. Any death or loss of those we love is devastating and not to be trivialized. We are called to stand in spirit, if not physically, with those who are mourning and grieving, to extend our care and support, to show up and stand up well after the event itself, pledging to show up and stand up not just when a so-called major tragedy happens, but when people of color are killed randomly in Kentucky, when people are shot in a yoga studio in Florida, when synagogues are set on fire in Brooklyn, and when immigrants seeking safety and asylum from violence at the border are threatened with that same violence. We are called to show up and stand up when the person in the pew next to us is still hurting and struggling. And in all that, we are called to proclaim by our presence, if not in our words, that God, who sees and knows that pain, who in Jesus wept and felt all the anger and sorrow and visceral awfulness of this world and the power of death over us, that God still stands by them and their families, still promises faithful love and care, still promises the gifts of resurrection and new life. This is the promise that we embrace this All Saints Day, this All Saints Sunday, as we remember with thanksgiving the faithful departed and all who have shown us the love and grace of God, the love and grace to stand by us and to be with us and accompany us and stand with us whenever pain and brokenness and sorrow and grief have racked our lives. To honor the saints today is not to celebrate perfection, but to offer gratitude for the ways that by God's grace, through their faithfulness, they have shown us the goodness and the love of that God who remains faithful through it all. Confident that God's promise of love and life is what truly has dominion over this world and over us, and allowing it to reign above all in our lives, we are called to look forward in faith. As Lewis writes, we live in between the certainty of death, but also the call to live and make the most of life here and now, how to give witness to the promise of the resurrection each day without dismissing the reality of death in our midst here and now. Yes, we know death all too well, but it will not have the last word. In that assurance, we may live, not bound by death, but free for life as Lazarus was. In that assurance, even in the face of death, we may give honor and praise and thanks to God who remains faithful. Yitzgadal v'yitzkadash, Shmei Rabbah, magnified and sanctified be that God's name.